Here. Confirm present. First order this will be Hospital 8.
Can I call Representative Grisenberg if you wanted to testify?
In the meantime, Mr. Snowden, do you want to give some testimony on this?
Yes, sir.
Would you please come forward and give your name and affiliation with the testimony you believe is relevant?
For the record, I'm Art Snowden, Administrative Director of the Alaska Court System. I come to testify on House Bill 8. The judicial branch of government has grave concerns with regard to this piece of legislation, especially the proposed section that changes 22-18050. What this essentially does is state that judicial retention districts will be the 1959 election districts, which would change our present system of having 4 judicial retentionalist districts and create 24 retentionalist districts for judges. 10 of these districts would not even have resident judges. The legislation would seek to have judges who routinely and frequently visit these areas to be voted on by the voters. Some of the problems with that is routinely and frequently is not defined. It leaves up to the Judicial Council what is routine and frequent, which seems somewhat run in the face of the Constitution, because the Constitution states that the legislature shall set retention districts based in a manner provided by law, not by the Judicial Council. Secondly, we think that it would be tremendous, the problems administratively. It says if a judge who goes out there and is not retained in one of these districts that he routinely and frequently serves, he could not be able to sit there for 4 years. Well, first of all, we do not generally send one judge out to areas. We rotate the judges and go to Cordova and other places, so it would be very hard to define. If a judge couldn't sit in one place and could in another in these districts, it would create a lot of problems. We feel, and the court feels, that 24 judicial districts, as opposed to the 4 present judicial districts, would unnecessarily politicize the judiciary. One case that was inflammatory, you could have a small district knock out a judge, say it was in a regional corporation, or in it they ruled against the corporation, rather than the system we have now, a judge's overall performance is looked at. That's a large area that leaves the voters certainly the ability to vote on a judge, but it doesn't get so small as to politicize the actions of the judiciary. Those would be our only comments on this piece of legislation, Mr. Chairman.
Summarize it, the court system is adamantly opposed to the bill.
Yes, sir.
Is there any...
That's
all right. Is there any way, Art, that the bill could be modified or amended to make it palatable?
Well, the problem creating 24 districts is pretty hard.
That's insurmountable in your opinion.
The court thinks that's fairly insurmountable. It's such a large change from the 4 judicial districts we have now to go to 24.
Okay, sure.
Are there any other questions?
There are 24 because why? Because there were multi-member districts in 1959.
All I know is that the 1959 Election Act does set up 24 election districts. It would be the new districts that would be under this bill. I don't have the map with me. I did have one. I could get it to this committee if you'd like to review it. Here's some smaller maps.
Are there some judges that don't live or work in some of those areas, as I remember?
Yes, sir. 10 of those districts have no judge at all.
I remember Seward had a representative, but it doesn't have a judge, it doesn't have a superior court. Why do you do that?
Then it says the judge who routinely or frequently visits that district, but that's to be determined by the Judicial Council, who routinely and frequently visits it, rather than the legislature.
It could be anybody.
It could be anybody, especially if we send them out of Anchorage. The judge that's free goes down, so they might be disenfranchised because no judge would routinely and frequently visit that area. It would be a number of different judges. Now they do have a vote in the area, but they might be totally disenfranchised if not one judge frequently and routinely visited that location.
Whether a judge survives or not might be a factor of where he happens to be assigned by the presiding judge. Like you said, you've got the Aleutian detail this year, and that's who you run with.
Right.
I'm just curious, when you use the term politicized, and we use the term maybe reflecting the feelings of the community or their region. So when does one become the other?
Well, I think it is a line that the legislature has to draw certainly, Senator. It has been throughout the history of the state since statehood, they've tried to keep generally large geographical areas for judicial districts, but small enough that the judges travel throughout that district and do serve. For example, in the first district, on many occasions, the judges from Juneau go to Ketchikan or Sitka and other areas, and the judges from Ketchikan and other areas do come to these communities. So although it's a large area, the judges do travel throughout that large area, and it's not so small that the people would not have any effect on that judgeship coming through their community. So that is certainly a balancing test that the legislature must come up with.
Any other questions?
One more thing. How does this work for district judges? Oh, district, same thing.
District and Superior Court judges.
I apologize for being tardy, Mr. Chairman, but I gather that Mr. Snowden, if I might, is saying that this bill would increase the politicalization of the judicial retention process. Am I correct in that statement?
That was one of the comments, yes, sir.
Okay. Could you explain to me your rationale behind that statement?
Well, there was a bill that was put in the legislature, if I may, by analogy, a number of years ago that created about 12 or 13 judicial districts that didn't pass, and they were basically, at that time, drawn on regional corporation lines. We felt at that time that if a judge sitting in an area where the judicial boundary was synonymous with a regional corporation started ruling against the corporations based on sound legal theory, that he could be well thrown out of office, that too small an area would end up politicizing. And it's the judiciary has to make hard decisions that are not always popular, as you well know, based on the Constitution and the laws. And the court feels that the larger the districts, although still small enough so that the people, you know, would have some opportunity to be aware of those judges in the district, as we do now, is a good balancing act. But obviously, in the long run, it is up to the legislature to determine that.
Mr. Chairman, in other words, the more familiar the individuals are who are voting on the retention or rejection of a judge, the more political the process?
No, I think in a small community, for example, you can politicize it and make it too small. A very notorious case, and the community may get upset over one decision. I think in that small an area, that you do tend to politicize and make every decision based on whether a man sits in office, not over the overall performance, his abilities, his or her knowledge of the law.
Demeanor.
Mr. Chairman.
Demeanor, yes, sir.
I can't understand why, if you have a large area, for instance, South Central Alaska or Southeast Alaska, they are going to be able to make better decisions on the judge's demeanor, on the judge's overall ability, on the judge's total qualifications, as opposed to the specific community that judge routinely serves. Why, when you have a broad number of people who have limited access to, you know, viewing the performance of the judge, do you get a better reading of his performance, as opposed to a smaller community which has more exposure to this individual judge? And what I'm saying is if the people of an individual community desire to get rid of a judge, I think they ought to be able to do it. And they should not have their impact watered down by a large physical area which has very limited knowledge of the judge. And, you know, there are examples of judges who have been rejected precinct by precinct in the community they serve, but who have been retained because of votes from outlying areas have put them in, and these outlying areas have no idea what this judge stands for.
Again, it would be certainly a matter for the legislature to determine a balancing situation. I think when the Judicial Council looks at people to see whether they should be retained or not, they look at those broad areas as demeanor, knowledge of the law, those types of things, and they try to keep away from the politicization of what happened on this one sensational case, which I think that balancing act has to take place in the judicial arena, or judges will not be free to make those very hard decisions that the Constitution and statutes demand. But again, it is certainly a balancing act that the legislature must decide on.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Art, if I may, the prime sponsor of the bill is here. No doubt he's going to testify upon it. Do you know, have you discussed this with him, number one, this bill?
We talked about it once or twice, and we haven't had in-depth discussions. Well, I think he felt he had a problem in Sitka.
I was going to ask you, what's the underlying problem? Why is the legislation before us in the first place, if you can tell me?
I cannot, sir.
Okay.
Senator, the concerns I have, and since the sponsor is here, you know, listening, but maybe you can contribute something to this, is the workability of it. For example, it's not clear to me what happens if I'm a judge sitting in Anchorage and I hear carry a pretty full load, but I spend 1 week a month in Cordova.
and the voters in Anchorage vote yay on me. They think I'm a wonderful guy. And because I have been tough on fishermen in Cordova, the voters in Cordova turn me down. I have one constituency that thinks I'm great, and I have another constituency that doesn't want me. Am I no longer a judge, or am I no longer sent to Cordova, or do you know how that would
go? I'm not really sure. It would be subject to interpretation. One interpretation would say you can't sit in the Cordova area for 4 years, and therefore I couldn't send you out in that area. Another interpretation...
Possibly those are questions that should be directed toward the representative who is at this point.
If there are no other questions, I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Snowden. Thank you. Representative Grusendorf, do I identify yourself, sir?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Representative Grusendorf from District 3. And the purpose of this piece of legislation basically is accountability. We have a very excellent judiciary system by which we have refined it to keep some of the politics out and pick quality by the Judicial Council. The governor then looking at those selections by philosophy, perhaps. And then you and I, the voters, looking at the voting on the retention of that particular judge in the district. In many of the districts that we do have, being that we have four judicial districts, we oftentimes finding a judge serving a given community, but yet at the same time, when it comes to a retention election, there's absolutely no relationship to his record in that district as to what happens on the outside. A good example would be in Southeast Alaska, which we are one basic judicial district number one, of which I am voting on judges in Juneau here, judges in Ketchikan, judges that I have absolutely no idea exactly how they perform, unless I read the election pamphlet, which I do, but many citizens do not. But at the same time, these people in Juneau and Ketchikan are also voting on the judge in the Sitka area. And oftentimes in the election, it could work to the advantage of the judge or the disadvantage of the judge. Just like you and I as elected representatives, the people in Juneau may think that I'm a jolly good fellow, but my district may not particularly care for that. But if Juneau could vote on me, I would be sitting here in contradiction to the wishes of the people that I intend to serve. Without going any further into the bill, there have been several questions that have been proposed here that I would like to address, Mr. Chairman. One that I can remember offhand was by Senator Josephson. What it would be the cumulative total of the vote of the judge that is serving a given constituency, if I may use that term. In other words, if this judge has a routine and frequency of serving in Valdez 1 week out of the month, he indeed would be subject to a retention election in that area as well. It would be the cumulative total.
Any further?
No. Perhaps one, Mr. Chairman. Is this to Mr. Grusendorf, or Senator, Representative Grusendorf? This bill, I take it, is in response to what your community, or at least you, feel is a problem with the retention system as it presently takes place. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, the original idea came from that with people who were concerned by the Southeast Alaska Conference made mention of this, and then as we started developing, first of all, we had the legislative research do some work on it, and then input from other people, and they said, hey, it also affects us, we're concerned too. So we then expanded the legislation to address the concerns of other people. At first, we thought it might be special interest legislation, and we thought there might be some constitutional questions. And then after we got into it, we found that there was not, and that it was applicable to the whole state. And those 10 areas, in 1959, Mr. Chairman, there was a judge sitting in every one of those election districts. And right now, I guess there are 10 districts that do not have judges, but nonetheless, the Judicial Council, in their assignment of judges, could come up with individuals that would routinely and frequently serve those areas, thus giving accountability.
The Judicial Council will assign judges?
Well, it could be the Superior Court judge, but I'm just talking about the outlining and fleshing out for how these assignments are to be made.
Ben, I'm not sure that's true. I wonder if this bill wouldn't have the effect of disenfranchising some Alaska, particularly rural Alaska, in the retention process, because I assume that there is no Superior Court judge that routinely or frequently hears cases in the Aleutian Chain, for example. And at present, I understand what Senator Pettyjohn said about how knowing or knowledgeable they may be, but a citizen in ADAC can vote on the Superior Court judges who stand for retention in Anchorage. And under the proposal, they might not be able to vote on any Superior Court judge at all unless the Judicial Council certified that someone routinely went out there. Maybe those people go to the cities for their litigation. I don't know how they do it. Or if the Judicial Council certified that by some kind of standard that Judge Jones has had four cases in Aleutians, and you know, if you're holding a court in Cold Bay, if that's done, then people in Accutane may not know anything about it. But if they certified that, you would vote on that judge only. But the people in that part of Alaska would have no voice in any of the other Superior Court judges that stand. In other words, if I may pursue this, let's take a notorious case like the Meech case. It might be that the people in the Aleutian chain reading the newspapers have an opinion about the judge who tried that case, but would have no form to exercise it.
Mr. Chairman,
mm-hmm.
When we use the term routinely and frequently, what we're referring to basically is judges who have a home base or a camera on which they work out of, but may routinely and frequently go into another area, or an area that isn't served, a judge that routinely and frequently goes in there. So if there isn't a judge in that area, any judge who frequently goes, being that there are no others, would be put on that ballot. So it might be possible that in Cold Bay there may be 2 to 3 names on that ballot of individuals that have been serving, you know, that area. That caseload, of course, is not.
Have you considered the opposite viewpoint? A Superior Court judge or a District Court judge from Sitka, who is very familiar with the problems at Sitka, in Sitka would come, and the people in that district are very satisfied. They come to Juneau frequently because they had an influx of cases here, and all of a sudden he becomes viable to the Juneau vote. And the Juneau voters don't like him because he's too easy on fishermen and they get voted out. What would happen then?
Mr. Chairman, if the judge is coming over here because of a heavy caseload and it's an irregular type of situation and no schedule to it, or a judge here has disqualified himself from a case, he would not, you know, be on the ballot here. But if it appeared that he was coming over and sitting on the bench here in Juneau, yes, the people in Juneau you know, should have a chance to go into contention if there is a frequency, a high degree of frequency, and also a routine use to his pattern. Yes, he should be subject to the vote, your voters here in Juneau.
I don't know. I disagree with you.
Mr. Chairman, I might point out that that's the situation today. Whether or not the judge from Sitka ever comes to Juneau, the people of Juneau decide, along with the people from Sitka, whether or not he remains a judge. And secondly, with regard to Senator Josephson's question, it's not a problem for rural areas that are not served by a judge being disenfranchised, since it is the cases which arise within the district, not which are tried there, which allow a district's voters to pass on the retention of a judge. So if a case were to arise in Cold Bay, that is, the incident took place in that vicinity, then those cases that arise there, that are routinely and frequently heard by a judge, that judge is subject to their retention.
Oh, but, Mr. Chairman, the more judges we have in Anchorage, how many Superior Court judges are there, Mr. Snowden, in Anchorage? 10. The more judges we have, the less likely it is that any individual judge is routinely and frequently hearing cases that arise in certain parts of South Central Alaska. I don't think that exists.
No.
If it does exist, but assume that it does exist, you would be eligible to vote as an Aleutian Islander or a Dillinghammer or whatever you are on the judge who hears those cases and who has been certified as hearing those cases from the Judicial Council. You would not be participating any longer as to the other 9, and I think that's a significant disenfranchisement of those people. Now, because you may live out of Dillingham and read the newspapers and feel like you want to vote no on everybody. And some people do that. They wouldn't have that opportunity anymore.
That's right.
Well, I think that's a big, big positive.
Well, Mr. Chairman, people in Sitka can't vote for that Anchorage judge right now. They're disenfranchised. It's a question of where you draw the line. And the thrust of the bill, as I understand it, Mr. Chairman, is for the people that know the most about the judge to be the voters. Not the people in Cold Bay that know about one case, the Meech trial. The people in Cold Bay that know how the judge that is assigned to them from Anchorage is performing the duties on the cases that arise from that district.
Mr. Chairman.
Let's not get into the...
No.
We'll save it for the floor.
Let me finish. Let me finish and then cut Mr. Page off.
That'll be the day.
I reserve the right.
We're not going to vote on this, are we?
It seems we're going to retain neither one of you?
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that what gives voters some measure of confidence in the judiciary is that we are all equal as Alaskan, at least in regional terms, in the broad four district terms, and that we all get to participate at some point on every name. And what this does is it changes that, and it tells people in certain areas, you are no longer going to be part of that process. You may get, a case may arise that might affect you, and you may have to stand in front of Judge X, but if Judge X was not routinely in the hearing cases arising out of the area, you just suffer that and have had no role. I think that's a serious issue.
I appreciate the concept, and I believe I do support the concept, and I think it's probably could be a little better refined in some manner. I think it could be refined a little bit, perhaps, but I don't think the cost-benefit ratio is equal to what we would expect the expenditure of funds.
What I submit that this bill would be before us today if there hadn't been some erosion to that confidence they had placed in judicial. There must be some problem out there.
That's true. Again, I'm not satisfied with some of the people in the Meats trial either. Neither the prosecutor nor the defender. I'm not happy with the judge either.
Mr. Chairman, that which the Senator Josephson has described already exists in our retention elections right now, but it has a tendency to be steered to the disadvantage of the people that certain judges are supposed to serve. I think the purpose of the retention election is accountability. And it's just not there. The court system has resisted it. I can understand why they're resisting it, because there's that degree of accountability that each one of those people have to face. There's been no consultation on the part of the administrator here on the court system to discuss this piece of legislation with me. There's always a tendency to wait until it gets over to the Senate, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any other questions from Representative?
No, but he's done very well presenting his side of the argument.
I think he's done a good bit. I don't know if I support it or not. Thank you very much,
Mr. Chairman, that's not very encouraging.
Well, I just, we have a Democratic small D committee here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We each have a vote and he has the other five.
Is there anybody else who would like to give testimony on this measure? Is there anybody that would like to give further testimony on this measure? Fiscal note on it would be roughly $110,000 every other odd year, $110,000,
Why?
One is for $8,000, the other is for $101,000.
Oh, I see.
Those are on odd years.
I see.
This is an odd year.
Chair will entertain a motion.
I move to report the bill with individual recommendations.
Is there an objection to that? How many do pass? How many, no rec? How many do not pass? Business would be the relating to the payment of attorney services and expenses for indigent criminal defendants prosecuted by municipalities, Senate Bill 255. Mr. Snowden? You know the procedure, sir?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Art Snowden, Administrative Director of the Alaska Court System. We would like to speak in favor of this legislation. If I might just give a brief background to the legislation. Back in about 1975, there was a case called Municipality of Anchorage v. State, where Anchorage had its own magistrates and judges, and the Supreme Court of the State of Alaska ruled that to be unconstitutional because the Alaska Constitution mandates one unified court system. So they said the cases would have to be put through the Alaska court system. And within that case, they said the municipality would have to pay a portion of the lights and the judge's time and the jury time and so on and so forth in processing those cases. Well, the municipalities generally didn't keep up these payments very well, although they paid for their own public defender service and so on and so forth, and the accounting was tremendously difficult. So when Senator Rader was president of the Senate, the court system submitted legislation to relieve the cities of the obligation for having to pay for processing cases through the court system under the theory it's the only show in town, that like any other citizen, they should not have to be paying a portion of the lights and the juries and so on and so forth. Senator Rader feared that the wanted an amendment on the bill to make it clear that they would continue to pay for their public defender and other services. And he happened to leave town, and Jimmy Chance, who was rules chairman, wanted to get the bill to the floor, and his concern was brought to her, and she said, well, we'll amend it next year. And the bill went through, and Jimmy Chance was defeated in the next election, and it did not get amended the following year. And what Senator Rader did fear did come to pass, that the city said under this bill they shouldn't have to pay for public defender services. Well, what this is creating, the reason I testify in favor of the bill, is tremendous problems for the state court system, because right now, I don't know the exact number, but there's 4 to 5 public defenders in Anchorage doing nothing but city cases because of the mass of city cases. The city gets the fines, the forfeitures, those types of things, and the public defenders...
Could you repeat that? The city gets all fines and forfeitures
from
the
state
under anything prosecuted under municipal
orders. The state pays for the prosecution.
No, they pay for the public defender. The city has its own prosecutors for ordinances, so they've hired their own prosecutors, but they don't pay for public defense. If the city wanted to prosecute under the state statute, they could do that, and then the state would pay for prosecution and defense. But in choosing to go under their local ordinances, they have their own prosecutors, yet the state still pays for the public defenders. Why this causes us tremendous problems, as you know, public defense has not always been a favorite topic of this legislature, and their funding has not always been concomitant with prosecution. And cases are being slowed up tremendously because of the tremendous workload of the public defender. And so many cases in our system, we can only move as fast as the slowest actor in the system. People have a required right to a defense. And it's really creating tremendous problems in getting cases through the system and moving it, and certainly causing the public defender a number of problems. And in as much as the city has the option of proceeding under state statute and having the state pay for the public defender, we suggest that if they proceed under ordinance and they get the benefit of fines and they hire police and prosecutors, which certainly affect that litigation, that they should also pay for public defense services, which would increase, obviously, the public defenders available to try cases, and the cases we feel would move at a much more rapid and reasonable pace.
So can I ask you a question? Do you know, I would suspect this might be a hard question for you to answer, but do you have any idea as to the amount of fines collected by the municipality of Anchorage on municipal ordinances?
No, sir. I guess we could look it up. Mr. Patrick Anderson is here, and he might know that answer, and I don't know if Ms. Dana Faye, the public defender, has any idea.
Okay. I imagine it's in excess of $84,000.
I would imagine that, sir, yes.
Well, the city of Anchorage, Art, I'm sure you know, and even my town of Ketchikan, they've been quite vociferous about this bill. It occurs to me that, as you point out, that a lot of prosecutions are not brought under municipal ordinances, but be brought under comparable state law, where the prosecutorial authority has a choice. And number two is, would not an additional side effect possibly be that there'll be a lot less criminal prosecutions if the municipality had to pay for them?
I think there would be better screening, but I look at
that screening process
as a very positive thing. It is our opinion, and only an opinion, Senator, that there's not a lot of screening going on in the Anchorage office. A lot of cases are dismissed right at trial.
Just dump them.
And they're dumped in, and it's creating tremendous problems. And I feel if they had to pay for the defense, that they would do proper screening, and they put in those cases that were worthy of prosecution. As you probably read just 3 or 4 weeks ago in Anchorage, there were 300 arrests out of Northern Lights from everything from littering with beer cans. Those all go through the system. Anybody with, you know, that is indigent gets a public defender and they clog up. I think you'd see less of that minor type of thing and a better screening of those cases that are worthwhile.
And where do offenders go that are convicted under municipal
in state jails.
State jails. And the fines for drunk driving, those drunk drivers were picked up under municipal ordinances and tried in municipal court, go to the municipality, right?
Yes, sir. They're prosecuted under municipal ordinances.
Pretty nice. Sure.
Do you see any problem from the standpoint that in maybe not Anchorage, but in Fairbanks or some of the smaller towns like the fourth largest city, the prosecutor and public defender would be in the same, I mean, have the same payroll clerk and the same master? I know we separated the prosecutor in the Department of Law from the public defender in the governor's office. We didn't want to get too chummy.
Well, they still have the same paymaster in the state government, too, sir. The paymaster would be the Department of Administration, which the public defender is now a part of. But I don't think the clerk's function would be a problem. Certainly, if there was any On a professional level, intermingling, there could certainly be conflict problems that could arise. But I guess what we're looking at is possibly better screening that many cities and small villages do prosecute under state statute, and when they do, the state has enacted these statutes that the state should pay for the defense and prosecution. But when they create ordinances, which the state has no control of, the numbers and types of ordinances they create, and they get the benefits thereof, and we have no controls over the number of city prosecutors are hired and over the screening, the state then is still stuck with that bill, and the court system still must process tremendous numbers of cases that aren't screened. And we're hoping that if they did have to pay for defense services, that they would screen them, to be quite honest with you.
Mr. Chairman, I introduced as an assembly member a little ordinance for the confiscation of vehicles operated by drunk drivers, which is a case that could go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, I suppose. Under that, in the present formula, the state would pay for the defender, if there was a defender.
Yes. If they arrested an indigent person driving the car, the state would pay for the defense, and all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Any other questions?
Thank you, sir.
Dr. Anderson, come forward, sir. If you identify yourself, your affiliation, then give us whatever testimony you believe relevant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Patrick Anderson. I'm representing the municipality of Anchorage. I have a letter that was prepared for Janet Rice, aide to Representative Foxon, who was considering introduction of a similar piece of legislation on the House side. We sent a copy to Senator Gilman, who had been assigned the bill in Senate Community and Regional Affairs. I'm not sure, has it been provided to the committee?
It should be
from Mr. Wurzbauer. And that states fairly eloquently the position of the municipality. We are concerned that the legislature not continue to do flip-flops on different issues that are addressed at some point in time. Mr. Snowden certainly has the historical background over me. I think at the time he was talking about, I was still in college and not even in the state of Alaska. The substance of the letter is that in a period of time immediately prior to and after unification of the different governments in Anchorage, there was a time when the municipality had a fewer number of ordinances, had fewer police, had less population, and fewer problems. I certainly believe the history that Mr. Snowden set out. The municipality could not, under the Constitution, operate its own system of courts. It was required to use the state system of courts. There was a period of time in there as well that the municipality was concerned about where prosecutions on the state level were directed towards impacts from the pipeline, and the state prosecution effort didn't address issues of local concern to the citizens. Now, I think that's true all over the state. The legislature and the state government have been trying to encourage the formation of local governments, the local control of local governments, and certainly local ordinances do address that. Now, municipalities are certainly not left without a substantial burden. We do have our own police protection. We do have our own prosecutorial effort. I'm not sure if Art can correct me. I believe we also pay for a portion of the corrections costs as well. Is that for no idea what some local governments do? I know that Juneau does. I guess I read that the council had to go back to the assembly for an additional appropriation in order to.
Well, Juneau pays a lot of things in Anchorage, doesn't it? Because we tax ourselves to pay them. We don't live off the state.
Blow.
Just tell them like it is.
How many times does it fail up there?
Yeah. Why don't you guys tax yourself so we can do some of this stuff?
Yes.
I am a dignified.
I'll refer to the senator from Anchorage response.
I see that. In this communications, if you put in your own deal, you'd have to 1/10 of 1 mil. Golly, geez, guys, what a terrible thing.
You want to hold an Anchorage?
We don't believe in big government.
Mr. Chairman, do you know whether the city is making money on its on this deal with the fines and forfeitures on the one hand?
And Mr. Wurzbauer told me that it's insignificant in terms of the cost that we would have to assume for public defense. I'm not sure what the exact amount is, but I can certainly find out real quick for you.
You would have also the option of raising some of the penalties, which...
Yes. Of course, we don't control the judiciary either, which is one of the unfortunate parts. We can't say that when you have a $1,000 fine, you forgive $800 of it, so you get $200 as opposed to what should be coming in to take care of the impact.
But, I mean, as a practical matter, if the court was cognizant that you were there, and the city was there, and all the costs, the court might tend, on the recommendation of the prosecutor, to impose a penalty on the limits of the ordinance.
seems like that's logical to me. I would certainly argue that if I was a prosecutor that...
if I were.
Certainly. Seems logical to me. I would argue for that.
Certainly, that's an option. I believe that misdemeanors are limited by two by state statute to the amount of money that would be levied in fine. I believe that limits $1,000, so we could not go above that. And I believe our ordinance also already provides for up to $1,000 in fine.
I just don't understand when you find the indigent person $1,000, how do you expect to collect $80?
No.
Any other questions for Mr. Anderson? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other people would like to, any other person?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would be here to testify.
Could you come forward and identify yourself, please, and your affiliation, and give us the testimony of your own.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm Dana Fave, the state public defender, and I'm here to testify in support of the bill. As Mr. Snowden indicated, we undertook representation of these municipally prosecuted misdemeanors in July of 1977. In 1978, the legislature funded us with one attorney and one secretary because of the emergency required to suddenly be handling all of these additional cases. Since that time, in the last 5 years, that caseload has risen, municipally prosecuted misdemeanors alone, and I'm speaking of Anchorage right now, from 943 cases in 1978 to a projected 2,300 cases for this fiscal year. In the first 6 months of this fiscal year, we had 1,150 of these cases. With this caseload and the fact that we've only ever been funded with one attorney and one secretary, we have had to, Mr. Shortell, my predecessor, and I have had to drain resources from every other department in our office, from the appeals department, the felony trial department, the mental health attorneys, the juvenile attorneys. And what that has done is meant that the caseloads of all of those attorneys are so high that we are required to ask for continuances in those cases.
What's your average caseload nowadays?
For the misdemeanor attorneys, it's ranging anywhere between 150 and 225 open active pretrial cases at any one time.
And what is the suggestible? What do they say, 50?
They say 400 a year, so that given the fact that we have 2,300 of these alone a year, and then we are projecting another 1,000 state prosecuted misdemeanors, 3,300 misdemeanors a year, and we have approximately 5 attorneys handling that caseload, so they're well over those maximums. And then all of the other attorneys who are doing the serious felony work where the appeals come from when the client isn't happy with the result of his case because he is incarcerated for a lengthy period of time and wants to appeal the effectiveness of his assistance. I think the court is very cognizant of making sure that enough time is spent on those serious felony cases and, of course, the appeals that result from those felony cases so that there are tremendous delays occurring in the system. And although I know that this legislature has tried to be really sensitive to the needs of our agency, the municipally prosecuted cases have just soaked up, you know, every resource that we have. And this bill would allow us to return to you the funding for the one secretary and one attorney that we initially were funded for this duty, and then reallocate the other resources that are necessary to the other crisis areas so that we can start speeding up processing of criminal cases. One other thing that I'd like to mention that was mentioned earlier with during Mr. Snowden's testimony and Mr. Anderson's, and that's regarding the city's screening of cases. And it's not up to me, I think, as a defense advocate to comment on the municipality's decision of which cases to prosecute. That's a prosecutor's decision, and that's one that I won't comment on. The problem comes that a very high number of their cases are dismissed either the day before trial or the very morning of trial after we've had numerous interviews with the clients. If it's a drunk driving case, gone and viewed the videotape evidence of their sobriety test a couple of times, found the witnesses, interviewed the witnesses, prepared cross-examination, possibly prepared motion work, certainly made 5 or 6 court hearings appearances with the client, including bail hearings, arraignments, calendar call, trial setting conferences, motions hearings, trial calls, and the trial. And what happens there is that I think it was your question, Senator Ziegler, about whether or not this would result in fewer prosecutions. The prosecutions aren't often being followed through on it at all. They're just not screening them. They don't talk to their witnesses. We will talk to their witnesses and let them know that their witness is no longer in the state, and they don't do anything until the day before trial or the morning of trial.
In the meantime, you've done your own work.
All of our work, and the attorney has to prepare as if they're going to trial. In fact, it happened to me. We had a large influx of cases during the Fur Rendezvous of municipally prosecuted cases when they were kind of cleaning up the streets of Anchorage. We had over 100 cases come in 1 week, and then we had a lot of drunk driving cases that were remanded down from the Supreme Court, about 350 that came in 1 week, and I assigned them to all of the attorneys in our office just to give some relief to these misdemeanor attorneys.
And I handled one misdemeanor case where the eyewitness, it was a fender bender in a parking lot, and the eyewitness identified a short, dark man, possibly native, as the perpetrator. My client was tall and blonde and Caucasian, and I called the witness and interviewed him, and he did not make an identification that sounded like my client. I called the prosecutor and told him that. He said, I'm sorry, this is a serious case, we're going. I prepared for trial totally, got there the morning of trial. The eyewitness to whom I had talked was there, and the prosecutor talked to him the first time, came in and said, I'm sorry, my eyewitness can't make an identification, we're going to dismiss the case now. And the problem is the attorney said, not only is it frustrating for them, and that's maybe not the legislature's problem, but it's just a waste of time and money and resources for our office. So I would ask that the committee seriously consider this legislation.
Any questions?
I'd like to talk to Dana for a moment or two about that. From anguish, but to a surprising extent, Ketchikan has brought about this. Is going to cost me, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. Now, first of all, and I haven't practiced criminal law for a number of years now, but it seems to me that when somebody has a legal beef, when the cops have an arrest, don't they almost invariably have a choice as to whether to go municipal or state? Not always, but generally. I'll put it that way.
I think that they may have an option as to which prosecutor's office, if you're talking about South Central.
Yeah, sure. Of course, where are we going to put our jurisdiction? With the state or with the locals, okay?
In Anchorage, of course, it doesn't work that way, but in Ketchikan, it very well may. I'm not sure.
I see Gail is shaking her head negatively.
I agree with Dana that in Anchorage, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, in Anchorage, the municipal police, if it's a municipal arrest, they automatically go to the municipality. If it's a state
trooper
arrest.
And they have no possibility of changing their mind at a later date and saying, let's go state?
I think the municipality certainly could decide not to decline a case and then they can go to the state prosecutor's office. But I think that at this point, perhaps just for the ease of administrating it.
Yeah, but let's get to the heart of this now. Somebody's given them the orders to file a complaint now. They aren't just legal geniuses running down. Well, let's see. Shall I get this guy in the state or shall I get him in the municipal orders?
I think they do that.
I think the way it works in Anchorage
not
right now.
Not the policeman I know, don't.
Well, the way that it works in Anchorage right now, if it's an Anchorage arrest within, by the Anchorage police, they automatically file the municipal the municipal complaint.
Well, one of the possibilities or threats or forecasts from Mr. Wurzbauer is that, actually he says it wouldn't be a good idea, but the municipality could say, we're going to file these as state offenses. That could be, it could wind up that you would just be handling more defenses with a higher caseload vis-a-vis state prosecutors instead of municipal prosecutors.
But if they were getting the $500,000 annually, they could afford to hire more attorneys.
The other thing is that our experience with the state prosecutor's office has been that they carefully screen their cases. Basically, if they bring a case, they look at it in the beginning, and if the case is going to be dumped, they dump it the second day rather than the 120 day, so that at least we don't have to do the unnecessary work.
If a police officer in Anchorage, going back to the other point, gets a call of disturbance in a home and goes and finds a dead body there, he doesn't prosecute that as a misdemeanor under the municipal ordinance, does he?
No. If it's a felony, all felonies, no matter where they're prosecuted, are prosecuted as state charges.
I imagine the directions come down to the lead cop that if it's drunk or several of these. Misdemeanors in which there's a fine attached to it, then it's under municipal ordinance. And if it's some other serious thing, there's no fine or no way to get any money out of the guy, then it goes as a state case. I think, Joe, you were first.
One moment.
Sure.
There is one area where you can save it. Isn't it true that in the municipal area you can plea bargain and the state cannot?
It's true that the municipality has plea bargaining. They do send us a plea bargaining offer in every case. Frankly, my preference would be that they screen their cases more carefully to begin with, and at least the cases that we prepare for trial. If the client wants a trial, the plea bargaining doesn't help. And I think that as the fines and penalties in driving offenses become more harsh, more people are going to want trials regardless of the plea bargaining because you're going to have mandatory time, which is fine, except that if the case is not screened carefully to begin with, we just hate to do the unnecessary work.
Senator Ziegler?
Yeah, well, that's my question. Obviously, I'd be flying totally against the wishes of my community if I said, let's go for this bill. And as I read you, your answer is simply just be more careful in your prosecutorial selection of cases.
I think that's just one policy consideration. That wouldn't help us in terms of the funding for the public defender, because right now, the fact that, first of all, it's interesting, in Southeastern, the number of cases that are that we handle that are prosecuted municipally are negligible. I could get you figures within a half an hour specific, but you know, I'll tell you that it's less than 100 a year. And in fair, the only other place that has any number of cases that are prosecuted by municipalities that were handled by us, which are the only ones we're dealing with indigent clients, municipally prosecuted indigent cases, the only other place is Fairbanks, which has approximately 385 cases a year.
So then you're saying essentially this is an Anchorage bailout.
The place where it's crunching us real badly is to some extent in Fairbanks with about 400 cases a year, which is under the LEAA standards, one attorney's time, and we aren't meeting those LEAA standards. The place where it's you know, where these cases are being prosecuted wholesale by municipalities and causing us to drain resources that are needed to move the cases fast, all the cases in the court system fast through the court, is in Anchorage, and we're looking at 2,300 cases a year right now.
An intolerable drain.
It's an incredible drain, and just amazing.
Are there any other questions?
Well, as a former municipal prosecutor for the city of Ketchikan, Mr. Chairman, Senator Siegfried Nelson, I think I just would want to remark that it is a two-way street, that not only does the municipal prosecutor occasionally allow a case to go to the last day before dismissing, but occasionally, in fact, fairly frequently, the public defender or defense attorney will follow a similar tactic and wait to the day of trial and then plead out.
I think you better leave it, Dana.
Okay. I just remember that the client's too. I mean, if a client sees the whites of the jury's eyes and then decides I can't handle this, I'll change my plea.
Clients also listen to their attorneys.
Sometimes they do. Anything else? Yes.
Thank you very much
for letting me testify.
Does anybody else would like to testify in this bill? Chair, I'll entertain a motion.
I move the bill out to pass with individual recommendation. Mr. Chairman, I come from the great part of Alaska, the southern part. And it is an increased tax effort, but it's really reasonable. I mean, I don't see how it can be any other way. There is an outcry of local people, they want more law enforcement, and I think they would pay them a tenth of a mil.
That's tough a deal if you're going to get better enforcement. I know that probably fine in the face of my own municipality, but right is right.
More attorneys to work to. I never looked at it
well,
that way.
Well, now, wait a minute. Now you shook my confidence. You've got to put more attorneys to work. How many do pass?
I'm going to be no rep for the time.
How many no rep? How many do not pass?
Maybe we can be consistent on this next one. See how it's going to steady.
Next order of business is Hospital Assembly Line. It has come to the attention of the chairman that the communication from Legislative Counsel Richard C. Fuller, I think you all have in your packet. I don't know if they had time. Yeah, there it is. It is the intention of the chair to write a letter to the Secretary of the Senate or to the Speaker of the House, rather, advising that we believe that this bill has not been properly passed as to the two-thirds vote on the rules changes. The title is filed up at the... If they're going to not vote the court rule change, then they'll have to change the title, that's my understanding. So, we can't change it under the new rules in the Senate, so in order to handle this, we'll have to send it back to the House. I've already spoken to the Speaker of the House, and we're in agreement with it, so if it's within, without an objection from the committee, I'll send this back to the House.
Explaining why we're doing it.
Right. I've told him it isn't any fight between the House and the Senate, it's just that we cannot address it properly unless we change the title. If they don't adopt the rules, if they adopt the rules, they have to adopt them under the rules. Can I stand here?
Yes, sir.
Is there any objection to that, gentlemen?
None.
All right.
Just for curiosity, what was the vote in the House of the bill?
I don't pay attention.
We never pay attention.
I think it's about 2316.
Well, I'm sure they pay attention to whether they're doing the right thing or not.
Well, they should be paying attention to this.
It was called to my attention by the Legislative Affairs Agency. I didn't ask for their opinion. As long as they brought it up for them.
Aren't they remiss in really not performing in the House?
Well, perhaps they did.
They just wanted to see if we'd catch it.
to test?
We have some other bills in here. Senate Bill 115 relating to individual rights of peace officers. I'll sign that for myself. Smart to substitute for House Bill 34, amended. That sounds like a good one for you, Senator. Is anybody here or not?
After that last dog you gave me. Which one are you giving me now, Mr.
There's Jones? Something wrong with that bill, did you know that?
What?
Dog bill?
It says no person can intentionally destroy a police dog. What if the police dog is injured so badly that they have to destroy it?
That's a very good point.
So I thought we did, if we just changed the word look to maybe intentionally to something like willfully do it, and then describe what willfully means.
I have some amendments prepared, Mr. Chairman, but they'll be coming in on the floor. I'm not going to bore the committee with.
You know what happens if you leave? You might get assigned to things that you wouldn't particularly care for.
Whatever you give me, sir.
Not him. Not you. Oh. Committee substitute for House Bill 82.
Which one you just gave me?
Mr. 34.
34.
Joe, have you had the ombudsman salary increases up there? Hell, I know about that myself.
Whatever you say.
Well, I don't want to load you guys up. Although you should be able to get that information. I'll give that to you a little bit. That's something that has to go. Okay, gentlemen, thank you for your courtesy.
I may be absent on Monday, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure, but
the person's probably absent on Friday. I'm hoping everything I've got with police dogs.
This is a priority.
Mr. Chairman. Al Adams is a prime sponsor.
Well, that makes it a priority.
I think it's Adams and Hayes.
Mr. Chairman, how could this is the title of the bill, evidently, isn't it? Or is that the subject of the bill? And the bill we got does not have that title.
Well, there's changing rule of Tennessee.
I mean, that's not part of this bill, though. So, it's come out of the House like that, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's...
They must have changed the title.
Well, this is probably the court rule, I think.
They put it back as the court rule failed.
Oh, court rule failed. But I mean, this is the original bill, right?
That's the original.
And this here is a House Bill 79. It doesn't say anything about amendment by the House anywhere. So if this was the original bill, how come they lost the title?
You have a particular interest in this, so you can go over and talk to Dick Fold on it. And report to me directly.
Well, I mean, I don't give a damn.
What's this?
What is this? Is that title original bill?
That's the original.
Okay, and what's the show us here where it's been amended or changed?
It doesn't show.
Okay, that's the question.
That's all they have to do is change the title. But they've been told by Chief Justice
Burke but the question is, what happened to the original title? It doesn't show in the bill we got.
Well, maybe this is what they meant by that abbreviation.
It's our rule provision fail.
Yeah, but
thank you.